What I wanted to do today was lay out for you the plan. First of all, as you know, we have the ticketing bill, which I am the author today, and I'll be taking the stand. Senator Gazelka will be chairing the committee. And I wanted to tell you that we're not going to be taking a vote on this bill today. What we're going to do is we're going to hear all the testimony. We have a number of folks from out of town that want to provide some testimony. So we're going to hear a complete testimony on all sides of the issue, and then we're going to lay it over. What I'd like to do is allow for about 30 minutes for the proponents, 30 minutes for the opponents, and then allow about 15 minutes for some question and answer rebuttals, whatnot, at the end as well. And, of course, as always, you can certainly ask questions during the testimony or after at the conclusion of each of the testifiers. And then that will bring us to about 11:45. And I'd like to finish a few minutes early today if I could. And as you know, we have a off-site tour later this afternoon. I want to allow a little time to grab something to eat before we leave for that, and we'll get some of those details on when we're departing for those of you who are going. So the plan will be to wrap up today about 11:45, and then the plan on this particular bill would be to take a vote, time certain, next Wednesday. So we'll vote on this bill next Wednesday. Hear all the testimony today, and we'll hear the or we'll take the vote then next Wednesday. So, members, with that, I'm going to turn over the gavel to the vice chair, vice chairman, Senator Gazelka, and we'll present the bill.
Well, the next and only agenda item is Senate File 425, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning again, members. What you have before you is a bill relating to ticket sales, event tickets, and I'll just tell you, as you probably know, about 4 years ago, in fact, it was 4 years ago, the legislature essentially created a secondary market, a legal secondary market for event tickets when we repealed the criminal penalties for what is known as ticket scalping or selling tickets for amounts greater than their face value. Essentially, that was it. We repealed the criminal penalties. And that allowed for a legal secondary market to emerge. And then you also know that in the intervening years, the last several years, we have had several adjustments made to this as technology has changed and practices have evolved. We have done our best to keep up with that. The goal, I believe, which has been the same since we repealed the criminal penalties, and that is that there is a place for a legitimate secondary market in event ticket sales and transfers. And we want to see that continue. This bill seeks to preserve that secondary market for consumers so that a consumer who purchases a ticket for an event is allowed to transfer that, be it sell or give, to somebody else without restrictions, without overly burdensome restrictions. And I'll tell you, I guess the central issue which we need to decide, we'll talk about it today, we'll decide next Wednesday. The central issue is on the ownership of the ticket. Some will say that a ticket is simply a lease for a seat for a predetermined amount of time, and there is some case law to back that up. Others, like myself, would say that there are private property rights at stake. You paid for an event ticket. That has value. You have ownership stake in that. And if you want to give that to somebody or transfer that or sell that to somebody, that you ought to be allowed to do that. And certainly there is that is also legal. If not, then the 2007 bill we passed would have been declared unconstitutional. It's not. So the answer is it's somewhere in between. So what we want to do, our job here, and I believe, is to continue to structure that framework around the secondary market so that individuals can sell their tickets, transfer their tickets, without undue restrictive practices by anybody else. So that is the central issue which we need to decide about this. It's not about, we're not going to be hashing out whether or not the secondary market should or should not exist. It's a fact of law. It's a fact of, that it does exist. That's not what this is about. This is not just a battle between corporations, which you'll be hearing a lot from. This is certainly that plays a part in it, in the primary market, certainly. It's about consumers, individuals, not just corporations, about the freedom of individuals. And you'll hear testimony about large numbers of consumers that are freely transferring their event tickets in a secondary market. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to have some folks come up to talk specifically. Oh, actually, before I do that, I'm sorry, I don't want to forget. I do have an author's amendment. Let's do that first so that we all know what document we're working off of. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move. Let me find the correct amendment here. I have the original bill. I have the A7 author's amendment, and I would like to move that at this time to put the bill in the shape that I would like to discuss and present it to the committee in.
Does everybody have the amendment? Senator Gerlach moves the A7 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, then, is the bill brief to the original bill or to the delete all?
I can answer, Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas. The brief is to the original bill, but I'll explain a couple of what we've done in the delete all is essentially shrink the bill.
Okay.
So it's just less. It's not adding new concepts. It's shrinking it. Members, maybe before I bring up in testimony, let me quickly explain what we've done with the delete all and where we've been. As the bill was originally introduced, we had sections on requiring the primary issuers of tickets certain disclosures and transparency about what tickets they had and what was available or what they're putting on the market and all sorts of things. That was section two. I've been convinced in discussing this issue with some of the opponents of the bill that there are some business issues at stake here which should not necessarily be disclosed, and it doesn't to me it didn't add to the central issue of the bill. So therefore, this delete everything eliminates section two. So we're not doing anything about the public notice obligations of ticket issuers. That is gone. We're also eliminating, there's some section on consumer protection minimum standards that we have, section four. There are some pieces of that are somewhat problematic. And again, in compromise with those who oppose the bill, I'm eliminating section four. And then sections five, six, and seven are not necessary. They have to do with enforcement. It's already implied. That would mean this does not have to go to the Judiciary Committee. And the effective date, we're just going to leave it at the normal effective date, August 1st, with all other statutes. We don't need a special effective date on this. So what that means is, starting from the original bill to where we are today, the delete everything amendment leaves Section 1, which is definitions, and it leaves Section 3. Section 3, which is the free market resale of event tickets with the prohibited acts. So that is where we'll be focusing our discussion on.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Senator Gerlach, without having to go back and reread the bill, the language that is left is identical to the language that was in Section 1 and Section 3, or did you make some changes within that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, there are some other smaller changes, but they're not substantive.
They're technical, Mr.
Chairman? Yes, or stylistic or some things. They're not substantive, and if I'm wrong on that, then somebody, I'm sure, will correct me on that, but I don't know. Maybe Mr. Stang knows that.
Mr. Stang.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I believe the venue size was bumped up.
I was going to get to that in just a moment to explain that one. Yes, you're right on that one. There is a, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, original bill, we were exempting out the event venues that accommodated less than 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And what we've done in the delete everything is we've upped that to 2,500. What that does is it takes a lot of those smaller theaters and smaller venues out of the bill. So, and there may be some, we have gotten some additional information that we may have to adjust that number again a little bit. But the goal of the bill was to make sure we cover the large venues, the ones where there's an active secondary market on, and not all the small theaters and small venues. So,
Senator Rest?
Does upping that mean that there would be fewer people listed in the opponents section?
Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I would expect so, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
I wonder if you're going to shorten your list here.
That, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, that is the goal of compromise. That essentially is what the delete everything is about. So it's about Section 1, the definitions, and Section 3, the free market. And that is what we're going to be working off of. So with that.
Senator Gerlach?
Yes.
Before you ask your people to come up and testify, could you clarify on section or line 1.31, State Agricultural Society? I know what it is, but I think the committee should know.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. The on lines 1.31 and 1.32, there are some additional venues which are being exempted from this as well. And again, they're self-explanatory when I list them off here that this is not what we're trying to get at with the bill. And the State Agricultural Society is the formal name of the state fair. As well as the State High School League. We're not trying to drag in all of the high school sports. The Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission is also exempted from this.
Thank you.
And you're correct. Those were added in as part of the delete everything. Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I would like to bring up some folks to provide some testimony in support of the bill. And let's see who's there. We are. Okay. And if you want
to. Sure. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Yes, sir. My name is Dustin Brighton. I am Senior Manager of Government Relations for eBay, Inc. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dustin Brighton, Senior Manager of Government Relations at eBay, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify on behalf of the 220,000 Minnesota constituents who use StubHub. eBay is the world's largest marketplace with over 89 million active users worldwide who buy and sell almost everything from automobiles to video games and everything in between, including live event tickets. Adding to its legacy of improving inefficient markets, eBay acquired StubHub 4 years ago and has grown the company into the largest online marketplace for tickets, offering best-in-class consumer protections, including a Fan Protect guarantee that ensures fans will get into an event or receive 100% of their money back. I should distinguish here, though, that eBay and StubHub are indeed online marketplaces. We do not position ticket inventory and are not a ticket broker. That's not what we are. At eBay and StubHub, we fundamentally believe that open, transparent markets, free of artificial restraints, are the best way to deliver low prices and value to consumers. There's one absolutely critical component, however, for efficient markets to remain efficient and benefit consumers, and that's open transferability. This bill, SF425, ensures that open transferability. In the past year or so, primary ticketing companies have been rolling out services that would either outright prohibit the free transferability of tickets, or even more insidious, force consumers to only resell through the primary ticketing company's authorized exchanges. The underlying technology that primary ticketing companies are using to block this open transferability is called restricted paperless ticketing. While eBay and StubHub continuously create and embrace new technologies, we do not support technologies when they are used to block consumers from using competing marketplaces and artificially raise prices to consumers. Technology, in our belief, should be used to empower consumers as opposed to restricting them. So how does a restricted paperless ticket exchange work? Suppose you purchase a restricted paperless ticket to a concert and cannot use the ticket. According to Ticketmaster's website, you must use Ticketmaster's paperless ticket exchange to resell the ticket. And more important, you cannot sell that ticket below the face value. So if you live in a market, if you're living in a market where an artist isn't very popular and you can no longer use that ticket, you might be happy to get $20 for that ticket that you paid $50 for. However, because of ticket exchange rules, you're out of luck. Ticketmaster's paperless ticket exchange not only won't let you sell your ticket at market price, but it also prevents you from giving that ticket away or selling it to a colleague on eBay because restricted paperless tickets are otherwise non-transferable. eBay and StubHub are not anti-innovation or even anti-paperless ticketing. We are, however, opposed to restricted paperless ticketing that puts consumers at a disadvantage. We think you have to have three immutable truths to keep markets open and to require open transferability. Consumers have legitimate reasons to sell tickets, resell tickets, number one. Two, interoperability won't harm consumers. And three, competition will lead to innovation and better services at lower prices. Number one, the need to sell ticket. There's a real need for people to resell tickets, including season ticket holders who can't possibly attend all 81 home Major League Baseball games, or those who need to resell tickets to defray the high cost of tickets for fans that can't go due to illness or financial reasons, prevent them from using concert tickets, which are often sold weeks or months in advance of a show, or fans who simply have a change of plans. Number two, there is a need for interoperability among technological systems. Consumer protections will continue to thrive even if you require interoperability. StubHub has already successfully integrated with Ticketmaster and other primary ticketing companies with respect to the delivery of electronic tickets. There's no reason why primary ticketing companies cannot create secure systems that enable fans to use competing marketplaces for the resale or transfer of paperless event tickets while preserving the benefits of that new technology. Number three, competition fosters innovation and leads to better services at lower prices. If consumers are forced to use a primary ticketing company's secondary marketplace, which make no mistake, Ticketmaster has two secondary marketplaces that they own themselves, they'll be subjected to a lower quality of service, arbitrary price floors, and potentially higher fees on resale services. So in conclusion, the Minnesota legislature in 2007 passed legislation to allow consumers to enjoy the benefits of an open and efficient secondary market. So I would ask, please vote for SF425 to protect that market from being undermined. Thanks, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak here today.
Thank you, Mr. Brighton. Any questions from the committee? Mr. Brighton? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next person is John Potter from the Fan Freedom Project. Mr. Potter, just state your name for the record, please.
We're going to do a different order, if that's okay with the committee, with your indulgence. For the record, my name is Dan Pulliam. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Ticket Network. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of in our support of Senate File 425. I'm also responsible for the Better Ticketing Association and the hundreds of member businesses who participate in the open market nationwide. Ticket Network itself is not a ticket broker. We are a third-party marketplace similar to StubHub and eBay that allows buyers and sellers to conduct online transactions for tickets to live events. Senate File 425, as amended, will ensure that consumers will be able to purchase and transfer tickets to live entertainment events as they choose. We believe that when a consumer buys a ticket, the consumer owns the ticket. SF 425, as amended, is an important extension of the open market law that Chairman Gerlach proposed and was passed in 2007. By affording these rights to consumers, you will put the power of ticketing squarely in the hands of the people who should have the most control over the market, the consumers. Let me also address an important concern about the bill that was raised yesterday. Nothing in this proposal will prevent any team or venue from running a technologically advanced paperless ticketing system. In passing this bill, you will ensure that the intended result of the 2007 law to have an open market in Minnesota is maintained. Second, it will provide choice in the market for consumers and ensure that the paperless ticketing system is a benefit and not a harm to consumers. Allowing consumers to choose the type of ticket that they want at the time of initial purchase will provide consumers with the options they deserve. In today's ticketing world, consumers are forced to choose which events they will attend months ahead of time. Consumers make these choices and take risks that an unexpected situation, family event, or illness may prevent them from attending a show. However, consumers need to have the most flexibility possible to ensure they are protected from anti-consumer practices that prevent them from giving away, transferring, or reselling their ticket in the market. In certain restrictive paperless ticketing schemes, tickets are not only restricted from free transfer, but consumers may also lose money because of the artificial price floors and caps set by the primary ticketing company, which prevent the original purchaser from recouping the full cost of acquiring those tickets. If allowed to be fully implemented, these closed-loop distribution systems, known as paperless ticketing, will undermine the intent of the free market law passed here in 2007. Control of the ticketing market through restrictive schemes harms consumers. It closes off the market and limits options. For example, tickets to last night's Timberwolves game against the Los Angeles Lakers sold for as low as $7 per ticket on the secondary market. If a restrictive paperless ticketing system established price floors for this event and successfully closed the open market, none of these below face value tickets would be available to consumers. It is important to point out that since the law was passed in 2007, in our exchange, the secondary market has seen average prices for tickets drop across the board for events and entertainment. And this decline obviously works to benefit the consumers who have more options in the marketplace to purchase tickets below face value. Removing this important right of ownership from consumers, and by allowing someone else to insert their judgment and decision-making for that of the consumer, is simply wrong. Moreover, this attempt by Ticketmaster to sidestep the 2007 law creating the open market in Minnesota needs to be reevaluated. The use of paperless ticketing as a method of control in the open market is in need of review, and we appreciate the committee's ability to look at that issue. We want to thank the bill sponsors for raising these issues, urge the committee to support an open marketplace where consumers are free to transfer, give away, or resell their tickets in a safe and secure online marketplace. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I would urge you to support Senate File 425, as it will provide an important balance in the law, and I look forward to working with all of you on this important initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Pulliam.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can the next supporter come forward and state your name for the record?
I'm John Potter. I'm president of the Fan Freedom Project, and I appreciate being here today on behalf of more than 400 Minnesotans who are members of the Fan Freedom Project. I'm here, obviously, in support of SF 425. The Fan Freedom Project is a consumer membership organization launched 1 week ago today to promote the rights and interests of live event fans nationwide. I'm here today to support sports and entertainment fans' rights as ticket owners and to support a bill that benefits fans. As Chairman Gerlach mentioned earlier, this bill does not defend so-called scalpers who commit fraud. It's not even about whether there's going to be a legal secondary market, and we all know fraud is illegal. We're also not here today to defend the use of anti-consumer internet bots, which you may hear about from the bill's opponents. Those are also illegal here in Minnesota. This bill does not limit in any way the rights of venues or event producers or sports teams to determine their ticket prices. They can price their tickets high, they can price their tickets low. This bill doesn't affect their revenue in that regard in any way whatsoever. And it certainly doesn't stop sports teams and event producers from using innovative paperless ticketing technology. It merely would stop them from using restrictive paperless technology. This bill confirms that Minnesota citizens who pay full price for a live event ticket whatever price is set by the event producer owns the ticket. They have the right to share them, to sell them, or give them away without asking permission from the event producer or Ticketmaster. America is the land of individual rights and property rights. We have free markets and we have fair consumer protection laws. We have many, many secondary markets, many resale markets, and it works well for millions of people. We buy and sell cars, we sell televisions, we sell golf clubs, we sell used clothing on the internet. We also sell them in yard sales and consignment stores. But imagine if your Vikings hat, your Wild jersey, your Twins bobblehead came with resale prohibitions that required you to resell those, if you were allowed to, back at the stadium where you acquired it. That's essentially what's happening with tickets. If you buy a ticket and you pay full price, you're being told, A, you cannot sell it, or B, you have to go back to the original dealer and they will tell you what price you can sell it at. That's not American. Today, thanks to legislation sponsored by Chairman Gerlach, Minnesota enjoys an open, convenient, consumer-protected market for event tickets, driven by supply and demand. When the Twins opened Target Field, ticket demand skyrocketed. But consumers could still buy tickets on the open market. Many of them on the secondary market were above face value. Some of them were below. Likewise, thousands of Minnesotans who are fans of the Vikings, the Wild, the Gophers, regularly buy and sell tickets on the secondary market. So long as the resale markets are competitive, transparent, and consumer protected, buyers and sellers are very happy, regardless of whether the ticket is sold above or below the face value. And team owners, theater, and event producers have no legitimate basis to complain about resale markets because they set the price, and in fact, they were paid full price by the original purchaser. Nevertheless, consumers' rights to buy and sell tickets are being undermined as Ticketmaster and event producers and sports teams use the internet and technology against consumers. Restrictive paperless tickets are presented as innovative, convenient, and even environmentally friendly. But make no mistake, they're aimed squarely at consumer rights. Consider the Cleveland Cavaliers, which last year, flush with LeBron James and heading to the playoffs, offered their season ticket holders convenient paperless tickets and even offered them a discount if they would take them that way. And then buried in that user agreement was the restriction, you won't be able to resell these tickets unless you do it on our wholly owned electronic exchange. And lo and behold, there's a price floor on that electronic exchange. And so if you go to StubHub, you will find Cleveland Cavaliers tickets for a dollar because they're not doing so well this year. But those season ticket holders who bought those restrictive paperless tickets are stuck with a price floor and have to be trying to sell their tickets for $60 or $80. It's not working out so well for those folks. It's not so convenient. This kind of market manipulation undermines consumer interests even after they pay full price. And left unchecked, this type of behavior is coming to Minnesota. In only 1 week, more than 7,000 consumers have joined the Fan Freedom Project, more than 400 of your constituents here in Minnesota. SF 425 will protect a competitive and consumer-protected market and a popular market. In doing so, it will protect Minnesotans from anti-consumer ticketing practices, and I urge you to support this legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Try to give another 5 minutes or so. Will that work
sure,
for you,
Mr.
Senator Gerlach?
I don't have the agenda in front of me, actually, and I'm not sure exactly
where
we're on the list.
Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is John Brayot. I'm the Vice President of Public Policy, Telecommunications, and Fraud at the National Consumers League.
Welcome.
Thank you. Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to appear before the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee to speak in support of SF number 425, and I applaud you for introducing this pro-consumer bill. Founded in 1899, NCL is the nation's oldest consumer advocacy organization. Our nonprofit mission is to advocate on behalf of consumers and workers in the United States and abroad. More than 300 Minnesota teens and teachers participate in our LifeSmarts Consumer Education Program, and we will have 14 high school teams participate in the Minnesota State LifeSmarts Championship next week in St. Paul. In addition to our consumer education activities, we also advocate for pro-consumer public policies at the state and national level. Last year, we organized a broad coalition of public interest and business groups to oppose the Ticketmaster Live Nation merger, and we continue to pursue consumer-friendly policies in the live event industry today. For consumers, purchasing an event ticket is all too often a source of confusion and frustration. Consumers often stand little chance of purchasing tickets on the on-sale date, as thousands of tickets are routinely held back from general public sale by primary ticketers. For example, the 2009 Taylor Swift show in Tennessee, only 1,600 of 13,300 tickets were made available for public sale. Similar incidents have occurred at Keith Urban and Hannah Montana shows, to name only a few. To make matters worse, ticket brokers often use automated ticket buying technology to buy up large blocks of the choicest seats when they go on sale. Rarely are consumers aware of their dramatically diminished odds of purchasing a ticket. Such barriers to access to tickets have caused consumers to increasingly turn to the online secondary market. In previous decades, consumers seeking access to sold-out events were forced to deal with shady ticket scalpers with little protection from fraud. Today, however, consumers are increasingly relying on online ticket marketplaces with strong refund policies to facilitate the buying and selling of tickets. While consumers may pay a premium for these services, they do offer a safe, secure way for consumers to purchase tickets, often at or below face value. The proliferation of restrictive paperless ticketing is a threat to consumer access to these online markets. While primary ticketers like to advertise the convenience of requiring paperless ticketing, consumers have experienced frequent difficulties redeeming their purchases on the day of the event and transferring tickets to friends or family members. For consumers unable to attend an event, resale of tickets to paperless-only events is greatly complicated, if not prevented entirely. Make no mistake, restrictive paperless ticketing will result in less competition in the secondary market, to the ultimate detriment of consumers. NCL supports the goal of SF number 425. The common sense consumer protections envisioned in the bill will preserve consumers' rights to transfer or resell their tickets as they see fit. In particular, we support protections for season ticket holders from having their substantial investment revoked for nothing more than seeking to resell their tickets on the secondary marketplace of their choice. This provision is needed to protect consumers from restrictive practices such as those put in place by the Pittsburgh Penguins, which will revoke consumers' season ticket privileges if they seek to resell their ticket on any exchange other than Ticket Exchange, which is owned by Ticketmaster. SF425 will put Minnesota firmly on the side of consumers. According to a Wakefield Research survey, 95% of consumers believe they have the right to sell or transfer tickets that they have purchased at their own discretion. In conclusion, I want to thank you for this opportunity to discuss this important issue. I applaud you for your leadership in this area and look forward to answering your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, well, thank you for coming down and testifying.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, next we're going to shift to those that oppose the bill. Senator Gerlach?
If I could just take a moment just to conclude on the proponent side of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, you bet.
So before I do that, I do want to, now we have, I think, all our members here. I just wanted to restate what I said at the very beginning of the meeting, is that today we're hearing just testimony on the bill. We will not take a vote today. The opponents of the bill have asked for some additional time to either come up with some possible additional language or to have a chance to discuss this offline with members and work some folks. And that was fine. And that's perfectly okay. And so I wanted to accommodate that. And we'll do that. So we have a vote set for next Wednesday. So today is just the testimony. Mr. Chairman and members, I think you've pretty much heard the reasons why we want to do this. It's about consumers having access and the ability to transfer their tickets without undue restrictions from the primary issuers. And with that, to Mr. Chairman, I think we should take some time and hear from the other side. I think what we said, we were going to go till about 11:45. So. Yep.
Well, with that, we have three groups, and so I think you all know group number one. I hope that this has been organized, so if group number one can come up, if you don't know who you are, I'll list the names. And as you speak, please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. Thank you for hearing the other side of the story. My name is Randy Levy. I'm the owner of the WeFest up in Detroit Lakes. I'm the owner of Rose Presents. I've promoted concerts in Minnesota for really a long time. I started in 1969, so a bit of history. a dog is a dog, a horse is a horse, and in political language, a pig with lipstick is still a pig. This has nothing to do with Ticketmaster, nothing at all. As a promoter, we buy the bands, we set the ticket price. There is a very, very occasional artist, such as a Bruce Springsteen or a Garth Brooks, that might say, hey, I want to keep the price of my tickets for my fans at face value, whether it's $29 for Garth Brooks or it's $69 for Bruce Springsteen. I want to control the price of my tickets for my fans. I don't want scalpers buying those tickets. And in this day and age, you'll hear some testimony here. David with Target Center has Usher on sale, a performer. He had 40 tickets open up after on a sold-out show. The show is in May, I believe. Within 2 minutes of opening 40 tickets, some seats became available because of views and sight lines. 4,000 bot requests came in for the tickets. So we are fighting this battle for the fans to do what we can that a fan can actually sit in row 10 or row 12 or row 15 at the face value price. It's a scalpers versus artist battle. Hardly a war, but it is a scalper versus artist battle.
Mr. Levy, if I can ask you a question, how do you know that if somebody buys a ticket out of state that they're automatically a scalper?
I will defer to the people who do ticketing. I do not process tickets. So we have Senator Gerlach, who in due respect feels that once you buy that ticket, it's his to do with as he pleases. We have the artist who chooses to come to this state or not. They can choose not to come with this very law that you're proposing. I don't want Bruce Springsteen to choose not to come. So we run this risk. They can choose to come or not to come. That artist is simply saying, I want the value of that ticket if I can protect that with a non-transferable ticket. And the proviso that I must remind you all, the proviso, it's my risk, the promoter. It's the artist's risk for what they're coming to try to earn their living. Anytime you want, and you will hear from buildings, you will hear from sports teams, you will hear from anybody that could remotely be involved with a non-transferable ticket, which is not even the case in terms of sports teams. They're thrilled when people use the tickets as many ways as they possibly can. If you want a refund, you can get a refund. So we're kind of sitting here going, who has what rights? At the end of the day, it's the artist's ball. If they don't come, you don't get to buy that ticket to that show. And what this bill is proposing is a barrier that an artist will have to make a decision. The real joke is there's so few of these, it's almost irrelevant. But there are a few. There are a few. So we're here on my side when a fan then has to pay $300 or $400 or $500 a ticket. It's a double whammy for actually all of us if we stop and think about it, because that same fan can't afford to go to other shows. I lose two or three shows to that fan. Our state loses whatever sales tax that isn't paid to that fan. Our buildings lose increased ongoing revenue to other shows to that fan. So I think it's best if I cut this short, because sometimes the questions are better than our babbling. It's peculiar to me that yesterday the law was for 1,000 seats. Today it's being addressed at 2,500 seats and potentially will be raised a little bit so that the opponents group will have less resistance to the law. The opponents group that you have seen, or if you haven't seen it, is this sheet. We don't want this law. We live here. This is how we make our living. These people who do not live here, they want this law. That's so they can scalp our primary tickets. There is a way that we have on a very limited number of shows to make it non-transferable. But again, if you want a refund, you can get a refund. Before you buy the ticket, before you push the button, it will say it's non-transferable. On this rare occasion that it comes up, I'm giving an example of maybe a Bruce Springsteen or a Garth Brooks. It really has nothing to do with anything except what happens in our buildings.
Mr. Levy, if I can interrupt too, the list you're holding out, I don't think you can confirm that these are opponents anymore, because we've exempted quite a few of these now under the proposal that Senator Gerlach has.
I believe enough of them are here that if you would like, they'll offer testimony that they still would be in opposition to the bill, and then that'd be up to them to come forward.
Is there anybody on this list that has not signed up that wants to testify? We'll make sure you get on the list.
The orchestra, Orpheum Theater, State Theater.
Minnesota High School League, are you here? Minnesota Orchestra, Minnesota State Fair, Orpheum Theater, Rose Presents, State Theater.
I am Rose Presents.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong line. Pandages Theater.
I'm the Orpheum State and Pandages, and I will testify.
I'm the High School League, we're not.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Levy? And we'll try to... You know. Thank you. I love that nod. All right. Let's next testifier, please.
Mr. Chair, other committee members, my name is David Balser. I'm the director of ticketing at Target Center Arena in Minneapolis. Basically, our goal is to provide a fair and efficient process to ensure that our fans are the ones buying the great seats at face value for our events at our center. For many concert goers, scalpers and brokers do make this near impossible for this to take place. One method touring artists have at their disposal to ensure that fans are buying the tickets is by utilizing this paperless software where it inhibits the transferability of the tickets. In most cases, this does take away the transferability, but it does so at the benefit of the fan, and that's important to note. If artists hear that their fans don't like this technology, then they will simply just not use it. Everybody in this industry is in it for the fans. I believe you hear from the opposition that it sounds like the secondary market almost has more of the fans' interest in mind than the primary market, which I find that hard to believe, and it's definitely not the case at all. I'll give you an example. We had Hannah Montana on October of 2007. This event sold out within minutes of going on sale, and it had nothing at all to do with the holdbacks. There were very limited holdbacks. In the end, fans did buy tickets, but in the end, too, scalpers bought thousands of tickets and resold these tickets at upwards of 100 times face value of the ticket itself. By doing so, they used bot software, which later became illegal in the state of Minnesota, but unfortunately this software is still being used today. 2 years later, the same artist returned to Target Center. This time, the artists chose to use the paperless technology and not allow their fans to transfer tickets, again, with the benefit of the fan in mind, because she wanted her fans to see the show at the value that she determined. I think it's important to note that at no time in the ordering process did we always had tickets available. The show did not sell out. The show eventually did sell out the night of the show, but during the process, at no time when fans went to Target Center were they turned away from buying a ticket. We were always there to provide a ticket face value for the fans. At the end of the day, compared to the show 2 years prior, we sold 35 fewer tickets. Given the artist the ability in certain cases to not allow the transfer of tickets does give the upper hand to the actual fans that want to attend concerts at Target Center and simply pay face value. Although deemed illegal in Minnesota, scalpers do still utilize this bot software to cheat Minnesotans out of great seats for concerts. These illegal programs not only run during on sales, but they also constantly pull for tickets every second of the day, trying to secure seats that are released at any moment throughout the on-sale process. I'm certainly not an expert in the technology, but I can give you some testimony on how it looks on my side of things when I see it on my ticketing system. Basically, when consumers purchase tickets at our events, I can see how many tickets are queued on our system at any given time. As customers decide to purchase or to not purchase these tickets, they'll either be sold on our system or released back into general inventory. For major on-sales, this queue number can easily be in the thousands, as our system can't support that much traffic at a single moment. This is part of the reason that we can sell events out very quickly. On any given day, however, we'd have anywhere between 0 and 15 seats at queue. Most people aren't, you know, searching our events at every single moment of the day looking for usher tickets. Randy alluded to the fact that usher is sold out. Unfortunately, it's not sold out, and we do have plenty of tickets available, so if you'd like to purchase tickets. We still do have plenty of tickets available. But on Monday, I was fortunate enough to release 40 tickets to the general public at face value. These were good tickets that were released from the artist, some on the floor, some on the sides close to the stage. Within minutes of releasing these tickets, 450 seats went into queue status on our system. About 5 minutes later, I looked again. There were over 4,000 seats in queue status on our system. 30 minutes after this carnage took place, the number of seats dramatically went back down to 15. The ultimate result, scalpers in New York secured 14 tickets, California 10 tickets, Rhode Island 6 tickets, Oklahoma 2 tickets, and Texas 2 tickets. Out of the 40 tickets that I opened, Minnesotans purchased 6 tickets.
So, Mr. Balser, so is that speculative or do you know that it's scalpers?
I know that it's scalpers. I contacted one in Texas. I have their phone numbers because it shows up on our system. And I asked if he planned on attending the show, and he said he did. And I said, would you mind if I just left him at will call for you? And he said, no. And he got very agitated at me and hung up on me. Another person I called in New York, she had no familiarity of what Target Center was. So that leads me to believe that she was not online purchasing tickets for Target Center to see Usher. So basically, to conclude, if you want your constituents to have a fair shot at reasonably purchased or reasonably priced tickets, I would encourage you not to pass this legislation.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. Say if grandma bought her granddaughter a ticket to see Miley Cyrus and 2 days before the show, for whatever reasons, the granddaughter can't go to the show, what are the options for her to get her money back? For the granddaughter to get the money for the tickets.
The grandmother purchased the tickets?
Yes.
She would simply contact the box office, and if it was a Miley Cyrus concert, she would contact me, and I would give her money back.
Okay. Would the granddaughter be able to get the money back, or does it have to be the one who purchased it?
Whatever card was charged, that's where the money would go back to.
Okay.
I mean, in the end, if I can clarify, in the end, you know, the transferability part, we're here to assist the fan. You know, obviously circumstances come up where you can't attend a show. We want those fans to continue to come back to our arena. We're going to do everything within our power to assist that fan. If it's a refund, it's a simple refund.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up to that, what if the granddaughter had a friend that wanted to go? Under the paperless system, how would that work? And go in her place?
Well, if they still wanted to keep the tickets. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Sorry. Chair. If she wanted
You're
to
being
keep
recorded,
the,
so I want to make sorry. Sure they know who's talking.
Senator Brown, it's Dave Balser. If she wanted to keep the tickets and allow her friend to go, there's two ways to do it. The grandmother could show up at the venue with the person she wants to escort in, swipe her card at the door, and then they'll go into the event. There's also a system in place where if her friend's mother wants to take her, we can get her credit card information and register that onto the account, and they can use that credit card so her mother could take her.
But grandma would have to give that information at some point?
Well, the grandmother would contact us, and then we can contact the person that she wants to have the tickets, and then we could put that information on that person's credit card.
Thank
you.
And
they can simply go to the show.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm kind of having a hard time following this, so help me through this if you can, because the legislation, and Senator Gerlach and I had many discussions about, I didn't like the original legislation on the secondary market, but it happens, and there were scalpers out there anyway. What's the connection between the secondary market buying the tickets and what we're trying to accomplish here today, that if you buy the tickets, I mean, if I buy a ticket, I think I'm the owner of the ticket and should be able to do whatever I want, and that's what I think the bill is about. I don't think it's about the secondary market buying up the tickets. So I'm trying to find the connection here.
In due respect, if an artist says, I'm willing to come to Minnesota, but I want to sell a certain number of my tickets that are not transferable, whether it's the whole house or whether it's the top 500 seats, that's their terms for coming to Minnesota. As a buyer, as a promoter, as somebody who's guaranteeing them their money, if I say to them, in Minnesota, you cannot do that. We have a law that says every ticket has to be transferable, whether it's paperless or obviously paper is easy to transfer. They can say to me, we're not coming. Our deal is we want to make sure that we have our best seats, and this is if they want this. Our deal is we want to make sure we have our best seats on a non-transferable basis, that the customer knows when he's buying the ticket, that he can't just go buy and sell this through StubHub or somebody else, right? He can't go on to eBay, that it's meant so that the fan can get a ticket at face value. It's the artist imposing their desire to have their blue-collar fan or their white-collar fan in the seat, the one that wants to go to the show.
If we can move forward, because we have two other groups we want to get done by... we'll be done with the testimony no later than 22, so that we can have wrap-up questions. This isn't your group. This is the other two groups after you. So please move faster if you can. Well, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a follow-up to that, because, again, I get that a little bit, and that's something that kind of goes back to the original bill about the secondary market. So if an artist has that, help us out with – how many tickets do they like to reserve, if you will, that are non-transferable, so that we understand that whole process as we're thinking through this?
To put it in perspective, one of the things that's happening here is they're trying to raise the limits via this law so that it wouldn't impact a state theater or an Orpheum theater, one of the small venues. It can happen just as equally there as in a big arena. It's really an artist's decision. In Hannah Montana's case, the entire arena was paperless, but was it transferable? Non-transferable, her choice. I will come to town and I will get it so moms and dads quit yelling at me the tickets are $300 and $400. I want a non-transferable house, so when you buy it, you go. And then, of course, customer service, you deal with problems and exceptions. They are minimal.
Okay, I'll leave it at that for now. Okay.
Just one quick note on the Hannah Montana. We send a post-event survey out to all of our fans after the show. And for that show particularly, we had 10 emails back that didn't like the option of the not being able to transfer their tickets. And that's out of 16,000 people.
Senator Cruz.
Just a quick question, and anybody on the panel. We talked a little bit about the scenario with the grandmother and the granddaughter. If they were to choose to get a refund on those tickets, I know that sometimes, especially if it's purchased online, there's additional fees that are associated with that. Would those fees be reimbursed as well? Would they get back every dollar that they had spent on those tickets? And then secondly, you know, I know we're talking about a lot of these non-transferable ones. In the case where these are transferable, could you talk to me a little bit about the fees that could potentially be associated with that as well?
On the first note, if they wanted a refund, we would refund everything with the exception of, you know, the delivery, the method of delivery. If they UPS the tickets, obviously we wouldn't be able to refund that because it's not technically ours. And then, I'm sorry, the second question was?
Transferability, any additional fees that would be associated. You know, we were talking about some different scenarios where maybe grandma would have to show up with somebody else? Or in a case where it is transferable, or even in a case where something like that happens, are there additional fees that would go along with that? Sorry, Mr. Chair.
That's all right.
Mr. Chair, also, there are no additional fees.
All right, can we get some testimony from the other guys? State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Huppenbecker. I represent the Minnesota Wild and Xcel Energy Center. Couple things to just go over quickly. I mean, there's a lot of testimony on below face value selling tickets. I mean, you guys know, you go on the internet, most tickets for popular events are not selling for less than value. It's about selling for more than the ticket price is worth. And so for your constituents and fans, when there's a sale, in the case of AC/DC, so they had 3,500 of the best tickets were paperless tickets. They were restricted, and the purpose of that was so their fans would have the chance of getting those seats. And so as a fan of the band, I think that's a good thing because I have a better chance of getting those tickets. For your constituents and the ticket buyers, it's better too, because in the scramble to get tickets between scalpers and your constituents, the scalpers are winning. That's a reason for paperless ticketing in some instances on the restrictive side. So your constituents, the consumers, have a better chance of getting tickets at face value and have a better chance of getting those seats in cases where there is artist restrictions, because they're not competing with people from across the country that are trying to buy those tickets and to use them to rescalp them. So to boil it down to the consumer, putting those restrictions on, your constituents have a better chance of buying those tickets. Now, another thing to separate, we have a lot of testimony about other sports teams. Minnesota Wild, we have 110 of our fans that selected paperless tickets this season. We don't restrict how they can sell them. They can transfer them. They can go online. They can transfer them to another credit card account. They can resell the tickets. They can do whatever they want. So in a lot of these cases, I'm not sure what problem we're trying to solve, because for the Minnesota Wild, we want our fans for season tickets to have the flexibility. We're trying to have them continue to be season ticket holders and feel good about that experience. We know they can't go to all the games. So on the sports side, it's not, we've heard about Cleveland and Pittsburgh, but that's really not an issue here. So, I mean, the bottom line on this bill is if you want your constituents to have the best chance to buy tickets, restricted paperless ticketing helps them do that because they're not competing. The scalpers are finding a way around all these systems. At the end of the day, if you want them to have the best chance to buy the tickets at face value and the maximum opportunity, you're going to limit that competition. So if you think at the end of the day you think it's a good thing, I think Senator Gerlach correctly characterized, it's not a property you own, it's a license. But if your objective is to have your constituents be able to have access to those tickets, then you wouldn't support this legislation. If you want to benefit the people that testified in favor of that promote that where you can, the scalping is an issue and you can buy the tickets for four times the value and compete and take those tickets off the market, I guess you would support this bill. There's a lot of Minnesota businesses here that operate those facilities that think for fans and constituents, this is not what you should be doing. It's not good public policy. We know there's a secondary market, but if the goal is talking about consumers and their access to tickets, this is not the path to go.
Are you with who are you with?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Jack Larson, the Vice President and General Manager of the Xcel Energy Center, so I don't have much more to add. I just want to say that if you've been to the Xcel Energy Center, you may have seen there's a jersey hanging up there that says number one Minnesota Wild, and that's for the fans, for the team. And that's what we represent, that we're all out for the fans. They are number one to us. It's not just the hockey fans. It's all the fans that come to the Xcel Energy Center, and we're looking out for them for everything. That's what we want to. We're in the business of selling tickets, and we want our fans to have the most comfortable experience at the facility.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Larson. So, in the Xcel Energy situation with regard to the sports teams, your tickets, whether paperless or not, are transferable.
For the Minnesota Wild are the only ones that right now have that as a sports team, and yes, that is available. And they are transferable.
And, Mr. Chair, do we know whether or not that's the case with the Vikings and the Twins? Are we going to be hearing from them?
They don't have paper left.
They can answer that.
Okay.
Yeah, if the Vikings can come up now and the Twins, that would be great.
Thank you.
Or at least those that represent them. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave St. Peter. I'm the president of the Minnesota Twins. I wish we were having this meeting in Fort Myers, but
let's go.
We both.
To follow up on the testimony from Mr. Larson and you know, specifically the Twins a year ago, we opened Target Field. We drew a franchise record of north of 3.2 million fans, and I'm happy to report we're on track to do that again this year in 2011. You know, we have a 50-year history in this state as a baseball team, and frankly, much like all the other franchises here, we are incented to serve our fans. We are incented to ensure convenience for our fans, and we are incented ultimately to ensure the affordability of our product. And not to mention the fact that a year ago, just to note, the Minnesota Twins at Target Field generated more than $25 million in state and local taxes that came back to this region. And to be honest with you, I find it a bit curious that we're here today listening to out-of-state groups coming in to suggest how our organization and other Minnesota businesses should regulate our business. And they find the way to position themselves as representing fans. Well, with all due respect, I think I'm a better representative of the Minnesota Twins fans and understand what that relationship is. And there's a battle being waged here. It's between scalpers and fans, and scalpers are winning. The biggest challenge that we faced at Target Field in year one, many predicted it was going to be the weather. The biggest challenge we faced was scalpers. Our goal when we opened the ballpark was to ensure that as many of our tickets would be available for fans across Twins territory at face value as possible. But from every part of our sales effort, from season tickets to group tickets to hospitality to single game on sales, we saw huge amounts of tickets gobbled up by out-of-state fans, and yes, sir, they're scalpers. And that was a challenge for us. Our goal was to make those tickets available to fans throughout Twins territory. Scalpers have gone to extraordinary lengths to do that. And frankly, we believe that technology such as what we're talking here today, down the road possibly could be a way to help ensure that our tickets land in the hands of fans in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Northern Iowa, Western Wisconsin. And as it relates to that, we are not currently a team that does paperless ticketing. We do not have it currently. And it remains to be seen when that would be launched here in Minnesota. But I do believe that the goal here should be to allow ticket distribution to people that are fans of these franchises for as many tickets as possible to be distributed at face value. And we think this technology ultimately could be a solution for that. We thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'll be available for any questions. We would strongly urge you to oppose this legislation.
Thank you. Okay, if you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Whaley. I'm the Executive Vice President of the St. Paul Saints Baseball Club. I probably need an introduction. I can't say I'm the Twins or the Vikings. So we're an independent professional minor league baseball club that plays its games in St. Paul. And I appreciate the opportunity today. My concern when I initially read the legislation last week, and I'll as a sidebar, rightly or wrongly, the state of Minnesota has licensed me as an attorney, so I tend to look at the world that way, and I apologize for my comments in that regard. But what concerns me is, and I'll direct your attention to Section 2, Subdivision 2, Paragraph 1.
I believe of the current amended bill?
I believe so. I believe I'm looking at the amended bill. And just, I would like to draw the attention to the fact that I think what's going on here is you're proposing a fairly radical change in the nature of the relationship between a ticket issuer and a ticket purchaser. I heard a gentleman on the proponent side of the legislation refer to ticket owners and individual property rights. And there is a long line of legal history that acknowledges that, that the nature of that relationship is such that it's a license and not a property right. And I think it opens up a can of worms to take what is now a license and turn it into a property right, which I think this legislation tends to do. One specific example, if I may, in our world that, that Dave and I work in, and I'm pretty sure the Twins tickets have a restriction or a waiver on the back for an assumption of risk, that if you happen to attend a game and you're injured by a batted ball or a thrown bat or something that's incidental to the game, you've assumed that risk and the team's not liable for any injuries that result therefrom. And that's been held up for a long time across the country in the courts. Well, if all of a sudden, I think the basis of that rationale is that the holder of the ticket is a licensee. And if you're saying that all of a sudden you're no longer a licensee, is the team able to avail itself of that that protection? I don't know that it is, and I don't necessarily know all the answers to it. I'm by far an expert from the field, not an expert in the field, but I would just alert your attention to it. I do think you're changing the nature. Secondly, I have just 3 points. The second point is, like Mr. St. Peter said, our relationship with our fans is paramount. We have got to maintain direct contact with them, and that the first consideration that a fan has in their experience is what they paid to get into the ballpark. We don't use, on a wide basis, electronic ticketing, but it's all going that way. The industry's headed that way. That's where we're going to be headed, whether it's today or now. Most of our tickets take place today, but via hard ticket. In 10 years, that's not going to be the case. My concern is that you've injected, in this case, or can inject, out-of-state interests or interests that aren't necessarily germane to your team into that primary consideration. What did I pay to get in the gates today? And that affects a fan's idea of the time that they had. It affects their experience directly. That's what concerns me on an operational level, is that you're taking the fans further away from the experience, taking the fans further away from the team. Lastly, and this is somewhat self-serving, I noted that there were, from the legislation initially drawn, there were some exemptions made for the state fair, the high school league, Minnesota Youth Athletic Services. I'm curious to know what the rationale behind that is.
If we can have, at the end, if we can have the author wrap up, then he can explain the rationale. Is that okay, Senator Gerlach? So if we can move forward to, is that Mr. Neppel from the Vikings? Did I say that right?
John Neppel with the Minnesota Vikings. I'm the ticket sales manager for the Vikings. And in the interest of time, I just concur with my panelists here. I couldn't say it any better than these gentlemen have. The Vikings just share the concerns of the others on the panel here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bonneff. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Neppel. So could you please be more specific with regard to the Vikings policy, with regard to transferability,
yes,
with
Senator,
regard to your intentions
yes,
on
Senator,
paperless tickets?
Yes, Senator Bonneff. At this time, we do not offer paperless tickets, and all of our tickets currently are transferable.
Chair, Mr. Neppel, if you were to go with an electronic version, would they still be? Is it your intention they would still be transferable? Do you have a position on that?
Senator Bonneff, yes, we would. We would make sure that all of our tickets would remain transferable.
Thank you. All right, if we can have the last panel up. Let's see. We want to try to get this done in 5 minutes or less. So
I'm the last panel.
All right. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Jim Sheely. I'm the president of Historic Theater Group, and we manage the Orpheum State and Pantages Theaters on behalf of Hennepin Theater Trust in the city of Minneapolis. You know, we're the small end of the spectrum here, and we kind of have an opposite problem in that we often end up with 75% of our house full, and two things happen. Sometimes we sell all the tickets, and that's what our audit says. And in the case of Nick Jonas, you might remember him, popular guy. We sold all the tickets, and we had lines at the box office. And when the people were admitted that had tickets, we were missing 25% of the audience. They weren't there because those tickets had been purchased by secondary brokers who couldn't unload them. So, yeah, we missed out on some revenue from concessions and things like that that hurts us a little bit. But more importantly, we turned away hundreds of people who couldn't get in because we couldn't sell them a ticket because we didn't have anything to sell. The other problem that happens when we end up with three quarters of a house sometimes on a regular basis for what we think should be a popular show is that because the scalpers can get in and operate so much faster than any consumer can possibly get and buy up the prime tickets in, the first 20 rows of our theaters, all we're doing is reselling the tickets again and again. So people want to sit in the front, and they can't. Everybody wants to sit in the front, and they can't. And we end up with three-fourths of a house because tickets are priced up so high. In most of our business is concerts and Broadway. And though we do everything for those people. We allow them to transfer their tickets. We refund them. Any problem they have, they come to our ticket office, and we solve it for them. We're there all the time. We're there. When they buy tickets through the secondary market, there's nobody to go to at 4:30 in the afternoon and say, I'm sick. You can't go back through a purchase on eBay and say, wait a minute, how do I get this? I have to unload this. They come to us and say, can't you do anything for me? Well, believe it or not, we do. We don't have the money. We didn't sell them the ticket. We don't even know who they are. But they come to us, and it's our job to help them. So all we try to do is connect with the artist and the fan. Those are our important people. They dictate how we deal with ticketing. They tell us how to do it, and we do everything that they ask us to do in order to make that connection. That's just what our job is. This bill makes our job more difficult. If we don't sell the rest of those seats, if we don't accommodate those fans who want to get in, then they're disappointed, the artist is disappointed, and yeah, maybe we could become a flyover in the entertainment business. Then we're not doing our jobs for any of our constituents. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Gerlach, if you want to come up and make any closing comments, you've already indicated that we're going to lay this over till next Wednesday.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll just wrap up. I think that this is a good bill. I think that we constantly struggle to keep up with technology, but I don't know that government will ever catch technology. A lot of what I started out with, I said the central issue was about ownership. And the truth is that property rights are oftentimes not an absolute, that's for sure. When you own a home, you know what, you think you own your home, but the truth is that you don't have all the rights to it because the police have police powers to come break down the door if there's illegal activity going on, and that's legal. The government has a tax interest in your home. If you don't pay your property taxes, they'll foreclose on it. So you don't have absolute rights, but yet you have a whole lot of bundle of rights in that ownership, so it's somewhere in the middle. And that goes for almost everything. And it goes for these as well. You don't have complete rights about with behavior or the times in which you're going to occupy your seat in a particular venue and many other of those sorts of things that we all acknowledge that's not within private property rights. You don't own that seat. But you do have a right to that seat for that time. And if you want to transfer that to somebody else, you ought to be able to do that. And as I said at the beginning, this is
It's this issue certainly has a couple of levels. There's certainly corporations that are fighting about this as well, but there's also what I'm primarily interested in is the right to consumers to be able to transfer their tickets without undue restrictions. Senator Brown mentioned a question. With his question about the grandmother and her daughter, but what about the myriad of other instances where you're at work and you want to give a ticket to somebody? What about employee incentives where you give tickets to somebody else? How do you handle that if you have to show up at the venue and swipe a credit card? I mean, there are so many things that would restrict those free transfers. The question was raised about why are some of the venues exempted? And my first answer is that I really can't really conceive of some of those smaller venues having an issue with this. That was the first thing. A more practical response would be, for example, the State Fair. The State Fair is a nonprofit, quasi-state agency, and I just don't see them as being, you know, caught up in this issue as well. So with that, members, I think that you've heard the both sides. We've allowed extensive time, and what my hope would be is that we would, again, have a week to deliberate on this, and we are the deliberative body. And then next Wednesday, we would then convene to take a vote on this. So with that,
so
Mr. Chairman,
we are
going to
lay over Senate File 425 till next Wednesday. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned.